first bill I want to take up this morning, Senate Bill number 372. Mr. Roundtree, please. Good morning.
I'm Dick Roundtree, Legislative Liaison, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And I'm here to testify on Senate Bill 372. What this bill actually does is it takes the age limit off membership in the Alaska State Militia. The Alaska State Militia is part of the organized militia. A question had come up on what is the unorganized militia before. The unorganized militia is everybody else, able-bodied citizen that is not in an organized militia, is what it actually is, according to statute. So what we're doing here is we're given the Adjutant General authority by regulation to set the upper age limit of volunteers belonging to the Alaska State Militia.
The only one word is why.
Why do you want a bunch of old fogies in the militia?
The reason why is that just because a person gets to be 60 years old, he is...
Easy.
Doesn't mean he's no longer useful to us.
I agree with that.
We have some very capable people that are over 60 years old in the state center.
No.
I'd be very careful of any further conversation about this thing if I were you.
How about knocking it off at age 65? I mean, they're valuable to 20 to be 65, but after 65, they're not used to themselves or anybody else.
I wouldn't expect.
You're getting in trouble too.
I wouldn't expect the audience to respond to anything like that if I were the audience in here this morning. Mr. Roundtree, let the record show Senator Fisher joined us up. This explains it pretty well. It puts the organized and the unorganized in separate categories.
The only question
I don't
is,
find any trouble.
The only question is, does the unorganized militia have any benefits?
No, sir.
No.
No retirement or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
For duty in country, that's all.
Move it out.
There is a motion to move the bill out of committee. Any objections?
Yep.
Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you, Mr. Roundtree. Any five-star general positions open in that?
Well, let's take a look here.
Six. Make it six.
Six.
Right. The next bill we'll take up is House Bill 406. Senator Ferguson here. Aid.
406. Voucher and Taylor.
Voucher.
Voucher. What is this?
Is that a vouchers bill?
An act of aid investments of funds from deferred compensation.
Right. How come we don't have a printed bill?
Representative Boucher, would you join us this morning?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good
morning. Senator Ray. This is a Keep Alaska Green bill.
Are you 65 yet?
Yes, sir.
We just fixed it so you can join the militia.
I've got a speech here, and I've got a bill in front of you. It's pretty clean cut, and looking at the array of talent here before me, I don't think I need to go a lot into this bill. It's just a bill that allows people to put their money into Alaska. And I understand there's some proposed amendments to it. I just found out about it, and I would strongly resist any amendments at this time. We can discuss that next committee.
Excuse me.
Yes, beg your pardon, sir?
Discuss what the next committee?
When it passes on.
It might not pass on.
That's right.
Maybe you'd like to discuss the amendments now. This is not a pass-through committee, by the way.
Oh, it is, okay.
I didn't know where you got that idea. Would you give your testimony, please?
I had an argument with the chairman, sent the ball for you, you know, so.
Would you explain the bill, please, Representative?
Basically, it would permit Alaska Credit Union, as well as other financial institutions, to develop tax-exempt deferred compensation programs to be offered to public employees through their various employers. Deferred compensation is a tax-exempt savings program approved under federal IRS code. The IRS code permits two kinds of plans. One through insurance companies and the other through financial institutions. Currently, Alaska law only recognizes investments through insurance companies with fixed and variable life insurance and annuity contracts. This bill would allow Alaskan public employees to also obtain deferred compensation through financial institutions in keeping with federal law. Alaska law was written for insurance companies because in the early 1970s, only insurance and annuity investments could compete effectively for these programs. However, in recent years, deregulation of banking has made financial institutions competitive for these long-term deposits. By expanding the law to cover financial institutions, we are thus expanding the options of both the employer and the employee to choose the deferred compensation plan that fits them best. Financial institutions mean banks, credit unions, but that is not just an abstract concept. One big advantage, of the bill is that it would allow employees to have the benefit of working through a financial institution which they frequent regularly and where evidence of deposit may help them with other financing as well. Secondly, this bill is kind of Alaska resident hire bill. It keeps Alaskan employees' long-term savings invested in Alaska, where it can be recirculated to help underwrite Alaska loans and investments. Most insurance and annuity money and deposits go straight out of the state and are invested elsewhere. Thirdly, the bill will allow Alaska credit unions and banks to compete for these long-term deposits. In the case of credit unions, it would help underwrite consumer-level loans and loans of credit union borrowers. Commercial and savings banks would find a broader investment arena just when the economy is starting to drop down because of the drop in oil revenues. The bill thus does three things. One, it benefits the employee by giving him additional options. Two, it benefits Alaskan financial institutions by building long-term deposits. Three, it has a general economic benefit to the state by keeping capital within the state. There is a zero fiscal note, and this bill passed out of the House unanimously. I would appreciate any support you could therefore give the bill.
Questions from the committee? Senator Fisher.
What amendments is Representative Boucher proposing?
I understood there to be some amendments submitted. You ought to address those when those come on.
Let me ask you a question. Let's take a real-life situation. Not in your case, because I think you're beyond the age where they would do you any good. But in the case of...
I'm the same age you are.
You're older than I am.
Senator DeVries, like for Senator instance, DeVries.
She could put 75...
No.
She could put in $7,500 a year in deferred compensation, and if she was in the... Senator, anybody, for 5 years, 8 years, she could do $7,500 a year. Is that what this thing says?
I'm going to defer to some experts that may be here, if you will, Mr. Chairman, so before you get into any of the technical aspects, I might be able to...
Representative Bauch, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Humphries, please.
Lady, I think, is going to address your answers, sir.
I want to hear from the director first.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Ken Humphries, Director of the Division of Retirement Benefits. Briefly, at this point, the department has no objection to this bill. One point that I would like to clarify, as we read the bill, what it does is to give administrators, not only the administrator of the state program, in this case me, the discretion to offer this sort of thing, but also smaller administrators. I do not read the bill as requiring an administrator to offer this, nor do I think it would be appropriate in the case of the state right now. I think it might be appropriate for some smaller plans. For example, when we bid it, we put not only a restriction of an A-plus best rating in a size category 15 to handle the size of account that the state has, and we don't have a multiple carrier situation. One of the reasons that we have no objection to this bill is that we don't see it as forcing a change. What it would do, as we read it, is allow administrators of maybe political subdivision type programs or other agencies to go ahead, if they have a multiple carrier situation, and utilize this type of investment vehicle, to which we have no objection. It would not affect the rules under which an employee can defer, as you were saying, Mr. Chairman, $7,500 a year. This is basically a limit that is incorporated in the federal law, and it's there without regard to what type of investment vehicle you have.
I see. Questions for Mr. Humphries, Senator?
Just for a matter of curiosity, and what is the percentage of employees that we have in the state now that's using the deferred compensation plan?
I believe we have just a little over 2,000 active employees in the plan, that is, who are contributing.
Compared to how many employees do we have in the state?
Probably, active real employees, not positions, probably somewhere around 13,500, I guess. So we're talking roughly one-seventh, perhaps, of all. One out of seven employees is participating.
So it's about 14%. Okay, thank you.
Why wasn't this done before? How did we finally decide this, to do this? Is this coming to somebody's idea?
This bill, you mean?
Have you ever thought of it before? Has the administration ever thought of broadening out the opportunity for
sure, and certainly it never seemed to us a good idea for the state plan, which was our concern. We have no objection to it for other plans, and there are many, many other plans.
Would there be a difference in the and the interest, you suppose, that it's returned to the employee? Would it be, is it historically more interest in the insurance and the annuity programs to get more return for your money than you would do through a chartered bank or a savings loan?
Generally, I believe that's probably true because of the leverage that we could get, bidding it all in a lump.
But you're going to continue to shop, is that it?
We intend to keep bidding it. This is our present plan, to go out with the rollover and go to the market and bid it as a lump in a guaranteed investment contract, rather than having employees shopping, just offering the one fixed rate, which is the best that we can get in the market.
Do you think your plan would be better? Let me go back over that again. Your plan would be better. The state plan would be better than the employee going to. As we note here, an example of Frontier savings here.
I think probably that's the best approach for the state, which is why that's what we're we're doing. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's true for other administrators. That it may be better for a small plan. They may not wish to go through the bid process, or they may already be in a multiple carrier type situation. And this kind of an opportunity when they're allowing individual employees to go from carrier to carrier, and it's a different, whole different type of administrative situation.
Well, it comes down to the actual fact of which one of these organizations, Frontier or Alaska Credit Union or any of the rest of them, will pay you the highest rate of interest on that, on those savings.
That's true, and the way the plan is set up administratively. Yeah. A lot of plans...
Cost factors.
You know, that they're not really administered there very much. They simply say they have a lot of carriers, let's say, on board, and the employee can more or less deals directly with the carrier, and they can go from one carrier to another carrier to another carrier. In this case, carrier might include, you know, a bank or a savings loan or a credit union or what have you.
But it's allowing the employee to do what he wants to do with that deferred compensation to put it any place he wants.
No. Mm-hmm. What this bill does is allow the administrator to invest and make that kind of investment available.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I read it, it does not force that. It allows it.
Aren't you in a legal suit right now against one of the insurance companies as the deferred compensation carrier?
Indeed, we are. Yeah, we're right now trying to get rid of the Hartford. We got rid of the Hartford. Let me amend that. What we're trying to do is get the rest of the money back.
Trying to get the additional money that
exactly that we feel like we're entitled to, and get into a relatively clean type of situation where we can go and bid every year, just a straight invitation to bid, not an RFP or anything. We're just going to the market and asking them for a number. Very, very clean type of situation. The way we've done, Senator, with the SBS program.
You don't oppose this, but you don't support it, right?
Exactly. I do not think it has application, not with the present philosophy in the state plan, but we don't have any objection, and it may have some advantages for other plans.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Humphries.
Thank you.
Let the record reflect the presence of the Senator Kelly.
There are no other questions. Is there anybody else wants to?
Wait a minute. Hang on just a second. Anybody else wish to testify? Sir? Mr. Kirkpatrick?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, my name is Willis Kirkpatrick, Director of Banking Securities Corporation. I'd like to testify just briefly, if I may, sir, on my experience with the Deferred Compensation Program. As the regulator of state chartered financial institutions, I am not opposed to this bill, although as an employee of the administration, I'm not necessarily an advocate of the bill either. I think it's a very good bill on the basis that it provides an investment vehicle for deferred compensations, not necessarily for the state, but the small political subdivisions and quasi-political subdivisions, such as school districts. The deferred compensation program is only available, or it only has its maximum benefit available to public employees, because the public entities are not taxable. That way, the public entity can hold the deferred compensation as its asset. And what this provides is, as the gentleman before me pointed out, that the administrator then of that political subdivision in the administration of those funds held as an asset of that political subdivision is a credit to employees for future payment of their wage. It gives that administrator a choice to offer to the employees of that political subdivision a choice of investment vehicle. Originally, under Regulation Q, the financial institutions could only offer 5.25 or 5.5. With deregulation in the financial industry, they now can be competitive in what they offer in their savings account. The things that I like about this particular bill involving state chartered financial institutions, or any financial institution in the state, is that it can build their core deposits, and yet the person who has the account there, if set up properly, can be offered the insurance, the federal insurance, up to $100,000 for that deposit, for an added benefit to the employee. Now, in my experience with this, I had set up a program in Alaska in the early 1970s in which I brought up a program from Equitable Savings and Loan in Portland, Oregon. And they were very competitive in the state of Oregon in certain areas. And they were offered a good investment program to the small political subdivisions, the Port of Portland, the Portland Fire Department, and those type of people subscribed to that particular program. In the state of Alaska, it is precluded from being offered even because the state law specifically prohibits them by not mentioning them as an investment. In this bill, I think it just opens up to the state chartered financial institutions an opportunity to present to the administrators of small political subdivisions a good program.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Leslie Ellis, did you wish to testify?
I'm Leslie Ellis, and I'm general manager of Frontier Alaska State Credit Union, which has the distinction of being the first state chartered credit union in Alaska. I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 406. In fact, it was my credit union that contacted Representative Boucher to sponsor the bill at the request of our depositors. Our depositors are largely educational-based. They work for political subdivisions. And they felt the need for an alternative to the annuity programs that they currently participated in. Some of their concerns centered around the fact that they had to deal with outside vendors. Things were complicated. They couldn't get information that they needed in order to verify the status of their accounts. They didn't understand the language. And they felt more comfortable just dealing with a local institution that they dealt with on a daily basis, people that they felt comfortable with. They also had concerns, frankly, as to what actual rate of return they were getting. We started to, at the credit union, because of their inquiries, we started to pursue developing our own deferred compensation program. And that was when we found out that we would need a change in state law in order to do so. The method of deferral for the employees is basically simple. They just take lesser wage up to $7,500 per year. And it's tax deferred savings. It allows the dividends or interest paid on those savings to also be tax deferred until retirement, when presumably the employee would be in a more advantageous tax situation.
If I may ask, if a person was in that thing for, let's say, 5 years,
mm-hmm.
do you have to be in it for a certain length of time and before you have penalties for taking out early? Is there an age limit out of yourself?
No, and there are, in the IRS code, it specifies certain catch-up provisions so that if you're not in for a long period of time, it allows you to put in larger amounts to catch up.
Any questions? Thank you much for your testimony. Pleasure of the committee.
Move it out. Then the recommendation.
Objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Without amendment.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Representative Boucher.
Who's this passed the committee, Red? Don't worry about it.
The committee stand at ease for a moment. Mr. Bradley, Scox. Would you like to join us? Burns? Sorry.
What did I see in here? I saw that yesterday, something else.
Burns. Burns and Cox. No. Yeah, Burns and Cox. Okay. The dance team. Okay, Mr. Burns. I'm sorry.
Let's see, what page were we on?
You want to pick up, Randy? Do you want to go through?
You're right.
The changes in the first batch of amendments, the first 14 you did make, we have a revised version, just briefly.
Okay.
Briefly mention them.
You're
so
okay.
We're up to date on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We fixed amendment number one. We had a small amendment change in, and we've done that. There was a small change in amendment number two. In amendment number three, since you deleted the
five and six,
we made that change there. There were no changes to 4, 5, 6, or 7. None to 8. Number 9 is the one where you wanted, we spent some time trying to, this was on the quarterly report, which we changed to annual. So now reads, we shall report on July 1 of each year the outside services or employment. During the year, any change in an employee's outside service or employment action must be reported to the designated supervisor as it occurs.
Right. Okay.
Madam Chair, just a question. Report on July. What if they report July 2 or June 29?
Well, we had honor before, and we had all that stuff.
I'm just asking, as a technical, does that create a technical problem?
Well, we didn't want to get into, if your day's late and we have penalties and all that stuff. We just figure as long as it's close to that, we'll go.
But what you're saying is that you have to report on July 1st.
By July 1st.
By 1st, okay.
I think that's what Senator Fisher, so everybody doesn't come traipsing in the office the same day.
Okay.
And if it's Sunday, you get me out of bed or something.
All right. Then there were no changes to 10, 11, or 12, or 13 or 14, and the new ones start on page 4, then number 15.
Number 15, okay, page 9.
After consultation, we have
consultation with the officer, okay.
Good, that's good line.
On 17?
Yes, all right, that's fine. Summary, yeah, maybe, right, good it is, good, okay, very good job.
Ready?
You dashed your way through that one.
They go to page 17, section 5.
Page
17, Article 5.
We're on page 17 now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Article 5.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman?
Yes, ready, go ahead.
Senator Fisher had a question about, he'd sort of like a brief rundown of how it would work if there was a complaint against an official who was, quote, elected official, and Susan's prepared that. Susan can give you a rundown how we think it would work.
All right.
If you'd like to hear that.
Go ahead.
Okay. if there is a complaint lodged against the governor, lieutenant governor, or the attorney general, the complaint would be still filed with the attorney general's office, but under an earlier section that we've been through, the attorney general must refer that to the personnel board. At that point, the personnel board has to hire independent counsel. It's the only way we could think of.
Susan, Ms. Chairman, if I may interrupt. Susan, could you explain at what point it's public, at what point it's confidential?
Sure.
As we go.
Okay. As with all complaints, it would be confidential until the point that the independent counsel determined there was probable cause to find that a violation had occurred. So the complaint is filed, the personnel board hires independent counsel. The independent counsel acts just as the attorney general acts in complaints against other employees and officers. If the complaint is facially frivolous, it could be dismissed at that point in time, still confidential. If there is sufficient allegation to go forward with investigation, the independent counsel would investigate. And if after investigation it's determined that there's still not probable cause established that a violation occurred, the independent counsel would then dismiss it. All of that is confidential. At the point, however, that the independent counsel determined that there was probable cause to find a violation had occurred, then at that point, the independent counsel would drop an accusation, just as we would with another officer, and serve the accusation upon the subject of the complaint, the governor, lieutenant governor, or attorney general. Once served, the accusation is a public document, and all proceedings from that point on are public. Upon service of an accusation, just as in any other case, the subject of the accusation has to respond to the allegations. And if the allegations are denied, then it will go to public hearing. The independent counsel would act as the person presenting the charges and in lieu of us, and then the an independent hearing officer is appointed to hear the case, and the ultimate review of the hearing officer's findings, conclusions, and recommendations is made by the personnel board. We've insulated the personnel board, we think, from political pressure by making them removable only for cause in this bill. That's not the current state of their, or their current status. But then the section that you had noticed yesterday that we were about to get to on page 17, line 26, if the personnel board finds a violation, first of all, well, the penalties available in A on line 9 are certainly available against any public employee. But then if it is in D, if the violation is by a public officer who is removable only by impeachment, then the personnel board would report its findings to the Senate and indicate what's taken place. But of course, that would be after public hearing. Then it's up to this body to determine whether there's been an impeachable offense.
Thank you. Senator
Ray. Well, I suppose this might be a dumb question, but it's the one that I'm forced to ask. Back up on the online, August 14th, it says, may recommend that the employee's agency take disciplinary action. Then you have it in the following, that they can recommend that they be removed from the board or commission. Well, now is this disciplinary action, does that include removal from state employment?
Senator Ray, the first paragraph, A, is for public employees. B is for people who are not otherwise public employees.
I know that. I understand that. Well, I'm asking about the wording of may recommend that the employee's agency take disciplinary action. Does that mean that they... It would seem to me that we should make it that take disciplinary action or recommend the dismissal from state service, something like that.
Because
you're doing the same, you know.
Senator Ray, it is our intention that the employee's agency take whatever disciplinary action is appropriate considering the status of the employee. If they're covered by collective bargaining, you have to follow the procedures in the collective bargaining agreements and have just cause. So the employing agency is best suited to making a determination whether termination is justified or whether a suspension, reprimand,
yeah, I understand
all
that. Maybe we want to short circuit the collective bargaining deal. And I think we can by law if we want to, something like that, if it's severe enough, that there's no way you can cover it under collective bargaining, the guy's gone. That's what I'm getting asked.
Senator Ray, we have on the next page, section 420 speaks to disciplinary actions.
Right.
Again, we've left that up to the employing agency to make the determination of what disciplinary action might be warranted. And also...
But we have stated amendment that it is a cause of action against an employee should they be found in violation of this law.
Well, you see, you got the personnel board telling them, the employee, to stop engaging in there. You're giving them the authority to tell them, stop doing it, sell your stuff. But then when it comes down to disciplinary action, you tell the personnel board gets out of it and the agency gets into it. So, I mean, you're kind of spreading out the responsibility. As long as you got the personnel board telling them to stop, and they have to, or telling them they have to sell their stuff, and they have to, then when it comes down to dismissing them, you're putting it up to the agency. In other words, I don't know.
Senator Ray, that was intentional because we believe the employing agency has the expertise to determine what disciplinary action is justified in what circumstances. The Division of Labor Relations and the personnel officers are fully aware of what is just cause for termination, what warrants only a suspension, and so on. The personnel board doesn't have that expertise. They don't review those kinds of personnel decisions.
Now, wait a minute, you stop right there. Have you ever seen what they did? The disciplinary action as outlined in the state agencies?
I don't understand what you're speaking about.
Well, that's what you're just talking about. Have you ever seen what the choices are for disciplinary action for infractions?
Senator Ray, yes.
They are so muddled and so nebulous that there's no way possible that even one agency has the same, no structure. I mean, I had a commission, the legislative commission was called the Blue Ribbon Commission, and we went into all of that, and we were astonished when we found out that the as far as the disciplinary status or action by the individual agencies, there wasn't. They followed some of them, had it followed more or less what the federal deal did, and other ones had partial, and it was just, it's just a mishmash. Well, I don't know if they've changed it at all.
Well, one of the things, Senator, that we put in, for instance, on page 18 in that subsection B, we said that an agency may initiate appropriate disciplinary action in absence of an accusation pending a hearing. We feel that there will be some instances.
Why don't we just put on there in the back of their recommend dismissal or something like that?
Mm-hmm. So you would like them to have the authority at least to recommend what they think that discipline should be?
Yes.
Okay, we can.
After take disciplinary action or recommend dismissal, including dismissal.
Okay, all right.
Including dismissal.
Okay.
Where's that located? You know what I mean? Line 20.
Page 14.
Because you're kicking them off of the
board. Page 14.
You're allowing them to kick them off of the boards.
Well, line 14.
I recommend it to be kicked off the board so you can recommend dismissal or something like that.
Then
you got it. Okay. Senator, that's we just wanted to recognize that not everything is going to require dismissal.
Oh, no.
Some things are trying to
run. You can believe it. Some people have had 5 days, if you used a state car unofficially, some had 5 days, some had a 2 weeks suspension. Some people didn't have anything but a written reprimand. I mean, there's no continuity at all.
Okay. Any questions on B?
That's what we've amended this morning.
Okay. C? D? Page 18, section 420.
One thing about B.
D, Senator Kelly.
What if it's a relatively minor matter? We're all thinking in terms of an impeachable offense, but what if it's just a relatively minor matter that nobody thinks is really an impeachable offense? How do you handle that?
Senator Kelly, the intent is that the personnel board, if it finds any violation has occurred by an impeachable officer, to report it to you, and then it's up to you to determine whether it warrants further action.
I mean, obviously, if it's a minor matter, we just assume, we felt that it was important, since these were elected officials, that it be reported basically to the entity that has ultimate authority and under the Constitution for that kind of action, but we didn't anticipate, if it was a minor matter, that you would recommend probably impeachment, but at least it would be reported out of the personnel board to the public.
Now you got APOC as an investigator to recommend dismissal. Now you got the personnel board there to be watching his dismissal. Who else are you going to get?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator?
I think Senator Kelly raises a good point. You probably remember what transpired last summer, and that was based on a recommendation by a board, or by a grand jury in this case, that the Senate investigate. So if a matter is referred to the Senate, unless the Senate goes through the complete review, the Senate will be subject to accusation of cover-up.
We could rewrite this to say, to suggest that perhaps they would report the matter to the Senate with a recommendation whether or not the Senate take any action to impeach, if that would be helpful.
No, wait a minute.
This
law is the executive branch now. Hey,
the governor and the federal governor is subject to impeachment.
Yeah. Well,
they're elected officers.
Well, they're going to be covered too.
Public officer, which means us.
No.
Impeachment?
No.
But we're not subject to impeachment.
We're not in the executive branch, Bill.
No.
Yes, we are.
Are we subject to impeachment or recall?
We're not in the executive branch. This is the
executive branch.
Okay. Yeah. You're not covered by this bill, regardless.
Look, I think the bottom line is the legislature really doesn't want to get involved unless the violation is such a nature that it might be considered an impeachable offense. These guys are politicians. Sure. The political charges are hurled back and forth in the heat of the battle. And we don't want to have to investigate every one of these charges that somebody gets mad and jumps up and yells about.
Do you want us to work on language that would sort of clarify what the intent of the report is?
Yeah, the report can go with the Senate.
Or serious offenses.
Our intention in this was merely to have a report to you so you knew what was going on. This didn't, we didn't intend that you would be required to take any action.
But only in the very serious cases, the minor ones, the ones that are actually can be tried, if you will, by the Senate or something. It's got to set up on a higher plane than just a minor.
I'm not sure we don't want to hear about them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think the report should come.
Of course, it'll be public. At this point, it would be public hearings, the whole thing.
Well, just work on that language on there.
Mr. Chairman, in working on the language, if the report, if it said a report shall be filed with the Secretary of the Senate or something like that, but rather than report the matter to the Senate, that sort of immediately makes it...
You shouldn't put it in there.
The President of the Senate.
Yeah, you're accused of mopery.
So it'd be just like a regular report.
Senate finds out.
Randy, so it'd go to the President of the Senate, so it'd be just like a regular report that would be read across in the law.
We don't want to go to a special session.
No.
That wasn't our intent, I can assure you.
I'm sure Senator Kelly wouldn't like that either.
Besides, we want you to send it to the House and not to send it in.
Okay, page 18, 420, disciplinary action for violation. Any other questions on that?
This was the section where we just made it clear that that this was a cause of action.
Okay. B. An agency may initiate appropriate disciplinary action in the absence of an accusation.
What we wanted to do here was provide an opportunity. Let's say, for instance, that it was a fairly obvious violation.
Okay.
We have to go through the hearing process, but that's not to stop the agency from going ahead and immediately pursuing removal of that person from office.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Okay.
430, actions voidable.
This is some penalties or some actions that the commission has available to it, I mean the personnel board. And in this case, they can void contracts and loans that have been entered into. But I wanted to draw your attention to some language on lines 15 and 16.
Wait a minute. Before we go any farther, am I leaving under the idea that the only time that this ever comes into play is in those areas where there is no collective bargaining? In other words, does collective bargaining supersede all of this?
No.
No, why?
No, not. No.
Because it wouldn't be worth a dang.
No, not at all. We added some language on lines 15 and 16 to say, in a determination under this section of whether to void a grant, contract, or lease, the interests of third parties who may be damaged must be taken into account. We have instances, or there might be instances where it wouldn't make sense, even though, in fact, let's say that there was a contract for $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 that was let illegally under this law. But maybe it's involving a number of programs who really were not aware of what was going on. It would not make sense under those things. It could possibly not make sense to go ahead and void those just because of the individual's actions when you might actually harm people who are involved in programs and they're ongoing. So we wanted to put that language in there so that could be taken into account. So you're not just out there willy-nilly canceling these because they were granted incorrectly when the harm that occurred may in fact be minimal compared to what would happen if you actually voided the lease.
But is the word must, does that put too much legal weight, or should it be may? In other words, we may take it into account, but when you say it must be taken into account, that makes a legal interpretation.
We've got a contract in Bradley Lake now that the state, through APA, is going to give out, and they have something like 100 companies bidding for it. And if there's the least bit of violation in the bid process,
you got to go through.
If somebody voids the contract, you got 99 third parties out there that are all going to come to the state and sue.
So we change it to may instead of must.
Sure, you can. That would be.
I mean, that way.
Or something.
Doesn't must put a lot of legal weight to it rather than may.
Sure.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Change that must to a may. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, maybe what we need to do though is say, interested third. Yes. Okay. Got it. Maybe we should say shall be.
Maybe.
Shall be is
too
strong.
I'm on the wrong one.
Come on, you're on the wrong side of the fence. The opposite of what
change
we're
the first
working
May. Give yes. another okay. So we don't say May and May. All right. Change the first May also.
Okay.
So put the second May in there and change the first May to something else. So it could be damaged.
They become immediately payable should they have been entered into illegally.
C.
25, 26, I want to say May.
Okay. Right.
Mr. Chairman, any state action obtained in violation is an action obtained?
Why do we say 60 days? That's an awful long time. If the personnel board finds something wrong, you got 30 days to do it. 30 days, I don't like it, 60 days. Why would, do you guys need that, that spread in time?
The 60 days?
Yeah.
Well, wheels being what they are, I suppose.
Yeah,
we've got no later than 60. We would hope to obviously do it sooner.
How about 45?
Okay.
45 days ago.
Well, where is it?
30
should be.
That's a long time.
30 days. You'll just have to work harder.
Okay.
Okay, and then on line 26, you have another muscle.
Right. Change that to May.
Senator Fisher, on line 24, would the word taken instead of obtained be better?
I would think so.
Delete obtained, put in taken.
Yeah.
D.
Hit the dirt gentle May, recover, that's right, because if I get anything, I'm going to spend it.
Within 3 years after discovery, is that compatible with what we had before?
This is actually a year longer.
Why don't we just make that two?
Okay.
Just so everybody reads and understands.
What line have you looked
that's
at?
That's line two on page 19, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, we went to 19. Make that three, make that two?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have discovery. All right, 440 civil penalties.
Okay.
Why the limit of $5,000? What if somebody rips it off for 40? 1500?
Well, we're assuming that under the civil actions, we could attempt to recover as much of that as possible in terms of the civil penalties assessed against them.
Why don't we put that up to some other figure as a deterrent?
Well, this is in addition to any other penalty. This is just $5,000 for
right.
For
the next section,
around.
For instance, would allow us to recover twice the benefit that they originally got anyway. So,
all right, $450 payment of twice the financial benefit.
This would be Senator Kelly's example. If it was a $40,000 loan, you got we could require twice that to be $80,000.
Okay. Questions on that part of it? $460 criminal sanctions additional.
This just makes it clear that mostly the board has civil actions, but if there were criminal penalties that the
that's
district attorney wished to prefer,
it.
They would be in addition to that.
All right, general provisions, applicability.
This is just stating who the law would apply to in A.
Well, didn't we go back over something in the previous, somewhere previously, that former public officers, didn't we have reference to the former public officers?
Yes.
And this does not apply to former public officers under applicability now. You're taking them back out again now?
No. Line 23 does say it applies to former where mentioned.
Okay. Small problem here. There are some executive branch agencies that legislators are members of, such as Governor's Commission on Juvenile Crime, something of that nature. I think I was a member of that for a couple of years a while back.
Task Force.
School Secondary. Sometimes you never even know that there should be an exemption.
Well, I was put in there that this exempt allegedly.
Okay.
Well, no. What you want to put in there is that persons covered under AS blank, 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 which is the legislative law.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We don't need two groups running around.
Yeah.
Bang, bang.
Okay, there is an amendment to the applicability A. B.
This is making it clear that this chapter intends to supersede the common law and set up the standards that we've put in Article 2.
We've got that in the legislative.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Page 20.
Does this say this chapter supersedes personnel rules relating to nepotism and so on?
No. It does supersede personnel rules relating to conflicts of interest. Excluding nepotism. There is a personnel rule and a statute that pertain to nepotism, and we didn't get into that in this bill.
We didn't address nepotism.
We're leaving the statute and the current rules that are already in force.
What is the rule in general?
Even though we don't have it covered,
it's incredibly complicated. I can show it to you if you want to see it. The statute is very limited. It says the head of a department cannot be related to anybody else in the department. So, but that's it. That's as far as the statute goes. That's been on the books since 1959 without amendment.
I'm sure it's never been followed.
The personnel rule, though, talks about division directors, people within their chain of supervision, and the second degree of kindred, and I'd be happy to show it if you want to see.
The man and his wife are working over here. She was he was the director, and she was the lead one, supervisor, whatever. She was using her maiden name, that was all.
Okay, let's go to page 20.
You don't want to ruin a good marriage, Bill.
Well, but by the same token, you have people who have a cohabitate that are in the same agency, but they don't. There's nothing wrong with that.
We should investigate those.
Let's go on to page 20, top of page. Nothing in this chapter includes prosecution of sin.
This is the catch-all, Mitch, that says, even though we don't mention it here, we can still prosecute.
Yeah.
C, divisions are not subject to negotiation.
Right on.
Right, got it. Okay. 920.
This is the section that the APEA raised some objections to, Mr. Chairman. This allows, for instance, an agency to adopt policies that are, in fact, stricter than the standards that are, the general standards that are in this bill, and specific categories. One is interest in organizations, or having a personal financial interest in a grant, contract, or lease, or the acceptance of a gift. We did that because, for instance, Fish and Game and some other departments, when we were going from department to department, they have some even really strict, particularly with Fish and Game employees, having to do with fisheries in the summer and release of information about locale of fisheries and things like that. But obviously we did not choose to get into in the bill the general nature, and we felt it was appropriate. They'd still be allowed, though, to adopt those kinds of policies. So we wanted to give them some leeway to do that here. They're still subject to review to make sure that they're not flying in the face of the statute. But we did want them to have the ability, obviously, to further restrict that where they think, because of the job situation, it's appropriate. So that's what the purpose of the section is.
Excuse me. Bill, are you looking at that under C, those two?
No, I'm just looking at the Constitution of the State of Alaska and the general provisions under there.
Did you blow the dust off?
No. Remember what the Supreme Court said, the general provisions were not part of the Act?
No, that's the transition.
Is that the transition?
Yeah.
Not the general, is that?
Right. Transitional is selectively part and selectively not part.
I laugh like hell about that. Okay. Schedule of transitional measures. Right.
Yeah,
the transition measures were, that was what they were talking about. Right? Although they had a effective date afterwards. The very last they had effective dates, which meant that that was no longer part of the Act either. Kind of dumb thing to do.
What would be the thinking of the committee if that thing were to read the subject to the review and approval of the Attorney General and the legislature?
Oh, Mitch, no. No.
What is he saying?
Just ask the question.
Did he have a relapse?
Keep going back to Regulation Review Committee, which has nothing.
Yeah.
This is
a good place to start. It's an excellent spot to start.
These would bore you to death.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not personal policies.
All right, let us continue. We are on one. Questions on A1 or A?
I like that concept. There are some cases where they should be tougher, and we don't know all the details or circumstances.
Mm-hmm. What are we looking at?
920, section 920.
Page 20. We do have C. We did something with that about the gift.
Right, we took out the words
took
or
up.
Benefit.
So yeah. We need to take benefit out of here then too?
Yeah.
We've already adopted that.
We've already adopted that. Well, we haven't.
Oh, okay.
We haven't adopted the second set of...
I don't like this.
We're not through
it. But it was your first set.
I don't like this agency policy either. Because you're going to have all kinds... You're going to have every agency is going to have a different policy.
Most of them aren't going to do anything.
Most of them be afraid to do anything.
But there are some that should probably.
oil and gas people. Circumstances where this would be.
No, I think the Attorney General ought to write the general policy.
Well, it's subject
to
it's subject to the review of them.
Well, but that doesn't mean anything. You got some guy that's sitting up there yawning and sleeping half the time.
Not the Attorney General.
President
Company.
Sure.
Well,
that's probably one of your constituents, Bill. You better be careful.
I really do think, Mr. Chairman, that there are certain instances where Senator Kelly indicated that the statute itself can't possibly cover some of the detailed things that occur. Oil and gas is another example because of bids and the privacy and confidentiality of those kinds of circumstances, that they really do need to have additional policies and prohibitions on what the employees in that particular section will be involved in.
That would apply to purchasing agents.
Right.
I think they need it, and that's cool.
I'll be real surprised if many people get real
enthusiastic. Yeah. Number two, requires public office agent to turn over a gift to the... Now, wait a minute. Turn it over to the legislature.
Donates it to the legislative lounge.
I think you're thinking like APEA now.
An APOC?
Right.
APEA. No, not really.
Where are you?
What we perceive going to happen is that no one's going to adopt any new ones. The ones that are just enforced that they're currently acting under, they're just going to probably be sent by the AG's office.
You mean, Tommy, you really believe that the agency is not going to promulgate any policies or put in any new policies regarding this bill?
Most of them are already in place. I mean, all these departments already have. That's how this came about, as a result of the fact that they said, we already have some particular procedures that are already in place that those employees are currently working under that are more restrictive in some cases than the statute. And they wanted us to allow for that in certain instances.
Randy, could I ask that you give us, in writing, two or three good examples of that? That's liable to contamination.
What we're saying here is that an agency may adopt a written policy that requires a public officer of the agency or unit to turn over a gift to the agency or unit.
Now what? Why would you? What kind of a?
Yeah,
what kind of
understand that either.
People would you have? I mean, one agency say, well, bring it in on a Tuesday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and the other agency says, well, we have to bring it in at 9 o'clock Monday morning. I mean, it don't make sense.
You could take a case of Jim Beam, but you got to turn it over to the agency for our annual party.
That's why I said turned over to the
Senate. I mean, two. I don't
Senate.
See two.
Well, actually, this doesn't make near as much sense now that we've rewritten the gifts and benefits section, and you probably could delete
Let's delete that.
Okay.
Delete two on line 20.
We'll
all right, section.
One.
Right.
No, they just.
They're not supposed to get them.
They're not supposed to get them.
They're supposed to get them in the first place.
I know, but they do.
What about for public auction?
I mean, you know, the president and first lady.
They're supposed
get all
to destroy it. Like they destroyed my watch already.
Did they do that?
There's a difference between the president and the first lady and the procurement officer over here across the street.
All right, let's go on, please. 9:30. Cooperation.
Broke my rule.
I think the procurement officer comes different.
You know, the customs broke my Rolex. They destroyed it already.
What'd you have in it?
Please stand at ease while I discuss the... let's come back on the record now.
Where are we? Cooperation?
9:30
cooperation is very simple to the point. 9:40 construction.
All right, I got a problem with this.
What is this?
This is my major conservatism jumping in here.
Randy,
this chapter must be liberally construed to promote high standards of ethical conduct in state government. I mean, come on.
All right, I move right to meet liberally.
Wait a minute. Do you know what instrumentality of the state are?
Excuse me?
You know what an instrumentality of the state is?
The railroad.
The university, the railroad, the bar association.
And every city and borough.
Every city and borough.
Every city and borough.
That's right.
You want every city and borough to cooperate with the state?
Well, we're talking about in terms of investigations that maybe.
If it had to do with them, I mean, if they were involved with it or reaped the benefit. Well, of course, we don't have benefits anymore, but I mean.
Okay, let's go back to construction.
This is
all right, how would you change it, Senator?
This chapter should be construed to promote high standards of ethical conduct in state.
Should be construed.
Should doesn't mean it. Liberally means too much.
No,
must is the proper word. That means
this chapter must. Just take out the words liberally.
It's like shall.
How about conservatively?
No, this is a moderately.
Moderately.
I Yes, a moderate construction.
This chapter, should be, well, whether it should or whether it shouldn't, I don't think the word should be. Do something with that.
I was just going to drop the word liberally.
Yeah.
It must be construed.
Sure.
Must be construed.
There are many liberals in this group.
On behalf of the Republican Party, I'd like to thank you for this. Okay, 950 regulations.
Your favorite subject.
Oh.
God.
Now, here's where you can put in review.
Yeah.
Review by.
Well, that's what we made, it's subject to the APA, so that you would have your opportunity here.
Who does it, the Attorney General?
Any changes in that?
Something you want to put on there, subject to the review by the legislature?
No, hell, no. We can't do that.
Court decision.
All right, under definitions.
Okay. Number one, just makes it clear, well, hope to define the difference between an administrative unit, which is a subdivision of the agency, and two, defines agency as the department, the office of the governor, the University of Alaska, the railroad, and any other public or quasi-public corporation. Boards or commissions.
What?
Why don't we put in there, including but not limited to the University of Alaska and the Alaska Railroad, so in case you pick up anybody else.
Yes.
You know, we got our draft person, both from yours or ours, will take out the words but not limited to, because they've changed the view that including by inference includes but not limited to, but we will be. We had that in here originally, and they just
don't. Well, we've got to the position now that we tell them what to do.
Okay, we'll throw it in.
We're slowly reversing the
power. All right. Agency, any question on agency? We just got through with that. Three, benefit. Now, we did something in the about benefits in there with gifts. Does this apply?
No, removed the reference to benefit in the gift section, so that this now is just defining what we mean when we say that someone is acting to personally benefit themselves.
I see, okay. Have we covered it all in all these words?
If we haven't.
I don't know what's left if you haven't. Can you think, I'm sure Senator Ray's going to come up with one. You got one? He's got one.
Okay, how does benefit pertain to the whole bill now? Say that to me again.
Okay, if let's say that you were, it applies in when we use the word to do something to benefit yourself. And so that would mean if you did something that was to your advantage or self-interest from which you profited, maybe you got dividends or pensions or salaries, maybe it was some kind of patronage in a new job, an advantage in the bidding process. Yeah. That's how that works in terms of
how about barter.
Well, yeah,
well, we've got for anything of value. We added the kicker there, of course, of anything of value. So.
All right. Four boards, commissions, board commission. That's boilerplate, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Business.
That's
boilerplate. Child. That's
boilerplate.
Boilerplate. Compensation. That's boilerplate. Eight, designated supervisor or supervisor.
This just defines who is designated supervisor,
okay,
depending where you work.
And you'll notice in H that the responsibility can be delegated within certain entities.
The commissioner, the university president,
the
governor can delegate.
How are you going to get across that you got an agency, the Alaska Railroad is an agency, and it's also a border commission? Right? How come?
You're back on page 21?
Yeah. You got them two definitions. You got them an agency and you got them a board or commission.
That's because the board, we wanted to cover the board of the railroad. Separate from the railroad, as an entity.
Is the Alaska Power Authority covered under this?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We wanted to
Is
cover the board.
Is there any agency that you can think of that you didn't cover?
No,
okay.
Where,
so
where,
you were trying to cover it.
How does doesn't the same thing apply to Board of Education then?
It's subject to the same thing, being what, Senator?
Board of Directors, okay.
Yeah.
Of the Alaska Railroad.
Right.
Okay.
How does this then apply under designated supervisor or any of this apply to
special assistance of the governor or lieutenant governor, is that, are they covered too?
Sure, they're considered a public officer under this bill.
They're a public officer? Okay, H.
What's the word limited behind something, what does that mean?
Where's that?
Anything, I mean...
Where's the word limited?
I'm just asking. Vic Fisher Limited.
Oh, it's, well, there's Arctic Limited, I don't really know, it's sort of like...
It's British interpretation, it's incorporated.
It's called an affectation.
No, it has a certain corporate entity of some sort.
Not an American law.
It's Canadian law?
It's British law, a corporation.
You have limited corporations in Alaska, you have places in Alaska that says limited behind it.
But they don't use the word just limited, they use limited partnerships.
It's not illegal.
Are you looking at the definition of business? I don't think we've left anybody out, I think that a limited would come under either a corporation or a company.
Okay, nine, financial interest.
Whether it came in, even as a foreign entity, as long as it's current.
No, it would be.
Maybe you should mention that.
I hate to bring this up, but I just don't like or parent, for God's sake. Because somebody goes into state government, we're looking at financial interest.
124.
An interest held by a public office official, an immediate family member, or parent. Come on, folks.
What are you looking at?
It means your father.
Well, you're way over 22, what are you doing on 22?
What page are we on?
21.
Hell, we're on page 22 and three-fourths of the way through it.
You are? What am I doing?
Well, you fall asleep on page 21.
Or you got concerned about your...
They'll sleep with limited.
You got concerned about your Rolex there.
Try to get your Rolex back?
Wait a minute.
I didn't catch up. But what does this mean about?
Well, that means that...
Yeah.
What about a child that isn't...
Your whole immediate family is subject to this whole thing, right?
What about a child that, what do you call a child that isn't adopted?
So your parents are the relative, you're subject to this one too.
Even though you don't adopt a child, what is it?
I don't think, is that what they're saying?
If it's not adopted?
They're trying to get out when you put all this stuff in your mother's name or something. Come on, give us a break.
You through with page 21, Senator? He turned the page, let's go. All right, we're down at financial interest again. And he can sleep on the rest.
Well, address Senator Kelly's concern regarding the parent. Well, how far are you through with this?
Our feeling was that we have, by the way, and I should point this out to you, that the definition of an immediate family member we have rewritten, and it now includes parent. So that's sort of a duplication.
You know, when you start getting into that stuff, I know brothers that hate each other.
We're just concerned, for instance, that let's say that you're in business with your parent, and you're, let's say, some kind of a loan, or maybe it's a grant or something that your father or your mother decides to bid on, and you're working for the agency that could approve that lease or that loan or that grant. We're saying it would be inappropriate for you to be in a situation where you were approving a benefit to your parents' financial interest, particularly if you are, that's the issue. We're not precluding them from you having financial interest with your parents, we're just saying you should not be acting in any way to benefit that interest in your official role. That's when that comes into play.
So it doesn't bring your parents automatically under this thing just because you're involved with them in some kind of family business or something like that. It doesn't have anything to do with state government, right?
It's only involving your official actions that you could take that would somehow benefit them through
if
your official
you own a
action.
Mom-and-pop grocery store in California with your parents or something like that, that does not bring...
What if you have a daughter or a son that wants to contract with the state?
And Matt said pay the child.
No problem as long as, again, you're not... For instance, let's say they want to contract with DNR and you work for DOT, there's no problem. It's only if they want a contract with a specific administrative unit by which you are employed and you're in a position to somehow affect the award of that particular matter. That's how, I mean, it's fairly limited in its scope here. We've not obviously disenfranchised those people from going ahead and in doing business with the state. We're talking about including your official actions that come before you that would benefit a family member.
Okay, just hypothetically, I work for the engineering department, DOT, and I have an emancipated child that is unknown, and he wants to contract with the engineering department, DOT. How does that affect me and him?
If you were in a position where you could in some way affect the administration of that grant or the award of that grant or contract, because you work for the same agency he wishes to contract for, and you're in an official capacity to benefit him through that decision, he could not do it in that very narrow area, only if it's that particular same unit.
Well, isn't there a way that you exempt yourself from the decision-making process?
Well, you know, Senator, we talked about that, but one of the problems we had was you could say, well, okay, here comes my son's grant for the same agency. I mean, I work here, and he wants his grant for me, and so since I know he's applying for it, geez, my assistant, you please make the decision on this matter. Frankly, we could never come up with a situation where we didn't believe that the assistant wasn't going to feel that for them not to act affirmatively on that particular grant would really place that subordinate or that even a co-worker up here in a difficult position with the person's parent. So we really felt in those only very narrow issue places where that actually confronts, would you preclude that?
What is an immediate family member? Is this blood relative?
Yeah. Yeah.
It would not include let's say I worked in the transportation department and my son's wife would be putting in for a contract with that particular unit. It would not affect my son. I would not have a problem there, right?
Senator, I don't think so. On page 23, we've got the definition of immediate family member. We've got your spouse and a relative by blood within and including
okay.
a secondary of kindred, which is the way the nepotism statute is worded, that same
regular member.
Second degree.
Okay. Any further questions on A, financial interest in there?
Are we taking out the orphan parent?
We can take
it
out.
It is redundant in this line.
We what?
Take out the or parent.
Or parent.
The definition of immediate family.
They were taking on or parent on line 24. Anything further on A? B.
It'll
Senator Ray, you threw
like
A yet?
It'll be something that'll come up here, and that'll be always the thing like that that holds you up.
Well, there isn't a perfect bill ever.
Oh, yeah. That's the one that's never been written.
You got it. B, holding position in a business, such as officer, director, trustee, partnership, or the like, for holding position manager. Any question on that one? C.
I have questions about C.
All right, C, Senator Gilling.
What can possibly be out there and need regulations on that's not covering A and B?
Well, we weren't sure.
This catches everything.
But, just in case.
Just in case.
I don't like C. I mean, you know, if it's not covered under A and B, why give somebody up to you crap?
Right, let's delete C.
Okay. Yeah. I don't mind C at all.
Delete C. 10.
I got the full face of the
C. I mean 10.
Wait a minute. Let's go back to gain for a second. How does that pertain to the bill?
There's a section 110 talks about the phrases that you may not, 120, I'm sorry, public officer may not attempt to use an official position for personal gain.
Okay, but then you go to the definition of gain, it says for oneself or another person. Anytime you make a decision, it's going to benefit somebody. That's what the awarding of contracts are all about.
Right, but in the context of the use of the word, we're talking about that you may not use or attempt to use an official position for personal gain or secure or a grant unwarranted benefits for any person. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Somebody's going to gain every time you make a decision.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, we should probably take out...
Reword that.
Okay.
Just reword that.
Right.
Okay, 11, immediate family member. Spouse, relative, relation by blood, second degree kindred. What is second degree kindred?
I think it's cousins.
It's your grandparents, your grandchildren,
oh.
siblings.
You don't need to worry, Kim.
I have a grandson.
We don't have any children.
Two steps away from you.
Just how can you do this to people? Your grandparents.
Senator Kelly,
they should be just as crooked as you.
You are in the position. Remember, all we're talking about here is having you in the position where you could take some official action through your, because of your official duties, to benefit your grandparents.
Yeah, but what if they
expect
it of you?
Well, if you can't benefit your grandparents, why are you bothering to work?
You can tell it's against the ethics code.
I seriously think that I doubt that if there are many people today who are in a position where, except perhaps maybe under, with children in the post-secondary education commission, or too many people are in the position of approving loans or grants or contracts directly for members of their own family, even their grandchildren or their grandparents. But if they are, you should not be in the position where you're going ahead and benefiting some blood relative with your official actions. I mean, truly, that would be unethical conduct, but I don't think it's going to happen that frequently.
Let me ask you a question. What happens if, let's say, an employee in Cuautla, the state airport maintenance foreman, goes to the local store to purchase something, a replacement saw blade, and the store is owned by that person's parent or brother or grandparent. Is that a violation?
No. And the reason it's not is because one thing, remember the scope of code talks about those matters that are conjectural insignificant. If it's a grocery store, if it's a retail store, and it's the place where the state ordinarily does business, clearly that's not going to be considered unethical conduct. What might be the more appropriate situation would be where, let's say, they owned, they lived in Anchorage, not Cuautla, and somehow, for some reason, the airport in Cuautla decided to buy all its supplies from the son's store in Anchorage. And then I think you have a different problem, but clearly this bill is not attempting to not that you're going to have those kinds of relationships, get into those kinds of situations.
What if you have an estranged spouse?
You wouldn't give them any business.
not a strange one. A lot of kind of strange. I mean, that's strange.
Well, that's not. That's not.
If you're divorced, they're not your spouse.
She I didn't say that you're divorced.
Then they're your spouse.
Okay.
You weren't going to give them the business anyway.
I mean, if the person was estranged, and then you were in a position, and even though you gave them you had no love or affection for them. They were the person that was best qualified for the job, and you gave them the contract, then they say, oh boy, this guy gave his wife a contract.
Well, could
what
be
about done. But what about the turn of the coin? You know, you've got a former spouse who's sitting there in a position to do you harm, and she does.
Withholding. Yeah.
Obviously, there's a limit on what this bill can address.
let's go on.
That was the next turn of the coin.
Let's go on, please. Immediately, family member. That's all right, I guess.
You should put, and a regular member of the officer's household of either sex.
All right, 12. Instrumentality of the state agency, whether in the legislative, judicial, or executive branch.
This only comes into play, remember the use of the word when we're doing cooperation.
Cooperation, okay.
And that would be.
Okay, 13. Do we need 13. That? Do we need that? Provision about the legislatures in there also? Or is that already covered, you think?
Well, that's where you're going to be
working. We'll put that in applicability, then we'll be all right.
Okay.
What if the officer is a regular member of somebody else's household? He don't have a household, he's just a regular member of somebody else's.
14, official action. 15, organization, boilerplate. Parent, boilerplate.
Nothing boilerplate. Right? Hang on.
I like the word.
Wait a minute. Under organization, political party. Organizations, virtually two or more people.
Mm-hmm.
How does this pertain to the bill?
Okay, this would be, for instance, I can use the example of. Let's say that you are a member of the
Libertarian Party.
some small group that, let's use the Sierra Club again. And or a local recently formed group that's out, maybe the Berners Bay
How about the Alaska Chamber of Commerce?
The Alaska Chamber of Commerce. And there is, for instance, let's take the Chamber of Commerce then and the Department of Commerce. And there's probably many employees over in the Department of Commerce who are also members of the Chamber. This would, where this comes into play is that the bill says, for instance, on the representation prohibition, that if there was a grant that was out there for, let's say, pushing Alaska for getting tourists and stuff up here, and the Chamber wanted to go ahead and bid on some of that money. That section included then the employee from Commerce, who might also be a member of the Chamber, appearing before that the department on that bid because of his relationship to the department. That's where this comes into play.
That sounds reasonable.
The term organization is used only in the definition of personal interest, which is on the next page. But throughout the bill, we talk about benefiting a financial or personal interest. And so that's where organization comes in, where you're taking action to benefit a group that you may belong to. You may not have a monetary stake in that group, but that you're a member on the board or something.
And it really only comes into play in those narrow areas where in the representation prohibition or things like that.
Anything more on the organization?
Political party involved in this thing. And I can't for life think why, but it is. What's got
what
to do with
being
libertarian, Republican, Democrat? Got
to
do with anything in this thing?
Probably, let me think here. Doubtful the state ever awarding money to a political party, unless they would be. I was thinking just in terms of elections. And the division of elections, and there might be some kind of.
Well, let's back up to 16. I get tired.
Oh, we're on 15.
I mean, line 16.
Oh. If you wanted to leave political party, I don't imagine that'd be that much.
You've got some pretty big wheels in both political parties that are connected with the state.
Right.
And work for the state.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Therefore, if you delete that.
We're talking about the party as an entity, are we not?
Right.
Well, the political party or other entity made up of two or more persons.
It could, come into play, for instance. Does come into play when there is, let's say there's a recall and the political parties are then involved, and remember they're usually in the room, and there sometimes is there. Don't the political parties can pay for recalls?
Certainly.
Recounts and things of that nature.
Oh, recounts.
Right.
So, okay. I think it's appropriate.
So, yeah. Okay, so okay. That would be, yes, we're going to make it in there then. Okay. So,
16
you.
Parent. Bill, did you have something?
Yeah, line 16. Back to line 16. Are you saying that the members of the ABC board do not fall under this at all?
No, they do.
Why?
Why do they?
Yeah.
Because they're non-salaried members of boards and commissions, and this bill does cover that. This is what we're defining as a non-salaried member of the board of commission.
Yeah, but you say receipt of per diem, nominal compensation for attendance of meetings or travel expense reimbursement.
Jesus, where are you?
Does not make a member of a board or commission a public employee.
Senator, the purpose is to distinguish between people who are volunteers who meet maybe four times a year on a board or commission and people who are public employees and work full-time for the state. And there are some public employees who are also on boards or commissions. So this separates out the group, the people who are just the volunteers who meet on the board of dentistry or whatever.
But receipt of per diem, nominal compensation, and that is exactly what members of the ABC board get.
Right, and that does not make them a public employee. That does make them a non-salaried member of a board or commission.
But non-salaried members
are covered, yes.
Well, why are you making that differentiation?
Well, for instance, remember the section where we talked about, in fact, I can give you an example, back on page
8, where you talk about
Remember the section where we talk about how the members of boards and commissions go about making decisions about conflicts?
Yes.
And we also talk about the other section, which was on page...
We're talking about boards and members of on page 8, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
And then the penalties are different on page 17, there's a difference between A and B in 410. Public employees are treated differently than Board of Commission members because the Board of Commission members are in a different situation. They have outside businesses and so on, and so they're in a unique category. Mm-hmm.
So you view them a little bit differently than you do somebody.
And another place where they're listed is on page 6, and this was specifically drafted, as a matter of fact, with an ABC board in mind.
All I want to know is, it's all you're doing is, you're not leaving them out.
No.
All right.
No, sir.
Okay. That we were on 13. All right, 14. Is there any questions on 14? Are there any questions on 14, Senator?
Well, I love including inaction. I mean, you can't even stay home in bed without getting in trouble.
Inaction. Official action means including inaction. Is that right?
That's well. The reason for that is that you may, in fact, be able to benefit either yourself or a member of your immediate family by not taking.
It's possible.
I'm not going in today. Oh, God, I'm in jail.
Senator Kelly, you are overreacting.
Okay. Is there anything further on 14?
You have very limited benefits by taking no action in bed. Believe me.
Senator Ray, do you have any further action on 14? I want to be sure that we're down with you.
Rated X.
Do you have anything on 15? I'd like to get through this morning. 15 organizations, Senator Ray.
For some reason, I don't like the political party thing in here. There's just something wrong with that. I mean, you know, that's our form of government, gosh darn it. And I'm not going to be regulated under the Executive Ethics Act.
Well, I think they've got to perform ethically as well as anybody else. We've had that experience before. If you recall,
this includes everybody.
Well, what's good for the goose, good for the gander.
Be ethical.
Don't
include you because
you're out of it.
There are only 60 people in the state of Alaska exempt under this.
There's a court system too.
No, because they're probably an organization of two or more people somewhere else.
Okay, let's settle down on this thing now. Let's get going.
An adoptive parent and a step parent.
Where are you now?
16.
We're not there yet, Bill.
I am.
Oh.
I think the bill is real good, and I commend Randall and Susan Scott for the job they did in a difficult area, because it is a difficult bill to draft, and they've done a good job. But I'm really starting to get concerned now when we get
political
organization and personal interest. But it just seems to me now that we've just opened this thing up so that it's going to be difficult for anybody to take any action at all, because somebody's immediate family is all going to be a member of some folks.
I can understand that on its face, reading these definitions, they seem all-inclusive, but if I could just remind you again where these come into play, and it's only in the prohibition sections in the code wherein you are not allowed to benefit a personal interest by your official actions, which means, and the way the bill is written, again, would be, for instance, under personal interest definition, for you to act in some way that would benefit. Let's use another example. Let's say you're a member of the Anchorage Child Abuse Board, okay? And you also, though, work for the Department of Health and Social Services. And you work for the division that makes grants to all the child abuse boards and stuff throughout the state. The Anchorage Child Abuse Board decides to submit for a grant from Health and Social Services for the division that you work for. What we're saying, and just in this narrow context, is you shouldn't be allowed to take action on a particular grant or contract that for a border commission that you are a member of and maybe very active in. It's just in those narrow areas where you're taking official action. It doesn't go any further than that.
Let me give you another example, you know.